What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Welcome back to the Greg Hill Show. Curtis and Courtney in for Greg, Wiggy, Shime. They're all enjoying their little summer breaks. But joining us right now, friend of the program, one of my favorite people to ever call or join us, Devin McCourty, who's done a great job this offseason. You're popping up everywhere, Devin.
I'm just trying to stay busy. I don't know about everywhere, but it's been a good summer.
It has been. And happy belated birthday, your birthday yesterday.
Thank you. Appreciate it. This is my birthday gift, right? You invited me on the show today.
Yes, I did the old slide into the DM. Happy birthday. Miss you. By the way, come on the show tomorrow. Right.
What are the odds that his brother has the same birthday?
Yeah, it's shocking, really. But you and Jason...
My little son is still trying to understand that.
Well, you and Jason did a great job during the first preseason game. I thought that you guys made a lot of good points. Always interesting to hear from former players talk about preseason because... As fans, as media, people jump to conclusions, whether they're good or bad. You guys stayed pretty level-headed the entire time. What was your biggest takeaway about this current Patriots team?
Yeah, I think that's one of the main points. You know, going into the game, I think everybody as a fan, coaches, they all have a certain expectation going in of how you expect, you know, individual guys to play, units to play, as a team to play. But then you also want to be reminded, you know, Washington didn't play any starters. So you want to try to combine the joint practice, what happened there, what you saw good and bad, but also how some of the young guys stepped up and played, because there is a difference from being in practice and then the lights being on and having to perform in the game. So I thought it was cool to see the energy they played with, to see the discipline. You know, even at halftime, Coach Vrabel talked about, hey, two penalties got offset, but you know, like we can't have penalties. And then they had, I think, two penalties in the second half. And I saw yesterday at the joint practice, there was a couple penalties. So I think all of it kind of goes in one pot. You can't just look at a game or just look at one or two practices. You got to start to try to put it all together and then form an opinion.
Yeah, Devin, I thought you and Jason were great as well. And my biggest takeaway from the game, because obviously you can't break down individual plays, and, you know, it's the Washington wasn't playing their starters most of the game anyway. It just seems smooth, you know, and not ripping one season or another. But the last several years, there's been, you know, it feels like, you know, constant pre-snap penalties, too many men on the field, formation, whatever. Just watching the game without really breaking down individual plays, it felt like the operation was sort of back to what the Patriot fan had expected.
Yeah, and that was something I asked Coach Vrabel before the game in the production meeting, because, you know, one of the things that we sometimes forget is, like, when a staff comes together, that first preseason game is their first preseason game. So some of the things you harp on practice or what you have to do, kind of you see that stuff, like, showcase in the first preseason game, because – you're trying to get so much of the X's and O's done that you don't always kind of get the small things. And I thought the staff, I think partly because a lot of them have worked with Vrabel in the past, some on the same staff in Tennessee, I thought you saw some symmetry between all of them of kind of the things that they felt were important in the game. And I agree with you, a lot of the kind of little smooth things that if you don't do, crush an operation, crush a drive, you didn't see as much as that. And I think that goes to what they've probably been working on all training camp with some of the discipline and things that they kind of harp on that needs to be done. It actually showed in that first game. And I thought the good thing was it showed from the beginning of the game to the end of the game, where the guys who were the first ones in did it, but also, you know, you get to the second and third string guys who are fighting to make the team, they did those little things as well, which is a good sign for a football team.
We had Vrabel on Monday, and he makes it very clear his feelings on ball security and how important that is for him and for the team. Drake May had a tough moment in the preseason game. Overall, though, did you enjoy what you saw out of him? You didn't see a ton, but...
Yeah, I thought he looked like a player that understands what to do and what not to do. And, you know, I think a part of being a good player, and I think he has a little bit of that game changer to him where he can run a little bit he can stay alive. Like, you're going to get some of those mistakes. As a coach, I think you understand you're going to get them, but you don't set the standard being like, hey, you can make two or three of those. Like, no. You rip them, you go at them. I'm sure in that meeting on whatever day that was, Friday or whatever after the game, I'm sure they got in that team meeting room. And, I think the culture Vrabel grew up in, I'm sure he went at, Drake a little bit in front of the whole team to let them know this isn't something that we approve of. This is not how we want to play. But I also think there's a side of Drake May that he's going to make some plays that a lot of us probably think are dead or you can't make, and he's going to be able to make them. So he has to learn how you tiptoe that line. And I think practice and preseason a little bit, you get to test how much you can do, what you can't do. I think the biggest thing is, I remember talking to Drake May last year about it. She said he has to learn from everything, a mistake, a good play. And as long as he does that, I think he'll be okay.
It's interesting this year, Devin, that they've moved on from basically all the captains of the old team. As someone that was a captain, I think, almost for your entire career with the Patriots, how do you entered in a spot where you obviously had a bunch of leaders already on the team, and then you were the one to be able to carry that torch. How do you restart? How do you begin to establish a culture, and how do you find those leaders that during camp?
Yeah, it's so foreign to, like, the New England region, because Coach Belichick was there for 24 years. But I get the unique perspective of, like, I'm, my brother, being super close with him. And the first thing he said to me, he was just like, that's what happens when you get new coaches. That new culture is not built on the culture of the past. It's built on that coach and who he deems as leader. So even though you have guys that, for the Patriots have been leaders and guys that carried the torch, that new coach that comes in might not necessarily feel that and feels like they have to go get their player. So I think a part of that new culture is guys like Robert Spillane, who started in Tennessee, guys like Harold Landry, guys that Coach Vrabel have identified as culture builders, guys like Milton Williams, getting to know him in free agency, and you bring him in on a big contract, guys like Carlton Davis, who played with Terrell Williams in Detroit. Like, you start to use your coaching staff and your knowledge to put together a team that you think has the culture or the standards or morales that you carry as a coach, and you bring them in to establish that new culture in whatever area. And I think Vrabel has identified those guys, and that's what this team is built up of. And that doesn't mean guys like Jabril Peppers and Drake May and guys that were already there the year, but it doesn't mean that they won't come in and establish and still be a part of that. Sure, they will, but guys like Will Campbell and Travion Henderson, those are going to be the guys that during the draft process, they say, all right, in 5 years, we're going to be looking for these guys to be our captains and our leaders, and they're starting to build that way.
Devin, were you surprised by the coach's decision to not play Steph Diggs on Friday?
No, I think with Diggs, and we talked to him after practice, and he was kind of energetic still after the joint practice with Washington. He's like, I told him I could do everything. I'm 100%. He said, but they told him, hey, we need you in the games. We need you during those big moments. We want you to be healthy. You've done this for a while now. You've been in preseason games. You've been in practices. We just want to be smart. And I think that makes a lot of sense. As a guy who got to play 13 years, I think there is an advantage to trying to map out a plan for you to be your best in those moments. And he's out there. He's going to be playing, but coming off an ACL, and even though he looks amazing, I give them credit to say, hey, let's not take this too far. Let's not get, this new receiver who we really like and just throw him out there just so we can watch him in preseason. Let's kind of be smart and take it one day at a time. And I think it will pay off for them. He's playing football. They're just not throwing him out there like he's 25. They're actually thinking about, the miles that he's put on his body and how to best get the best out of Diggs later in the season.
I'm just curious for you, Devin, what do you think is a successful year for year one Vrabel here? And, I know you're not too into the Vegas stuff, but over-under is 8.5. What do you think this season would be if it's a success? What do they have to accomplish?
This is the hardest question, because even last year, I remember, when you win 4 games the year before, 8 and 9 wins, that to me is amazing. That's past success. That's above average. That's above, that's like a really great season for them. So to me, it's how they perform. It's how they look. If you want to put any thought into Vegas, then it is. It's 8 wins would be a successful season. But I think I think from my outlook, as I look at the rest of the division, I look at them on a high note to finish second in the division behind Buffalo and possibly compete with Buffalo during the end of the season to be like, hey, we're fighting, we're still alive. And if I think ultimately Buffalo becomes the division leader again, but I look for them to be in that number two spot. So does that leave you at 9 wins or 10 wins with a chance to possibly make the playoffs? I do. I think they have enough talent this year that will get them in that conversation, because that to me is the biggest difference. Like, once you infuse your team with a ton of talent, it gives you a chance. It makes people believe, and that's what they look like right now.
Ramondre has been absent from practice since Friday's game. He played okay on Friday. Is it just that Travion Henderson has completely taken over? It seems weird that he hasn't been seen practicing at all since Friday.
Training camp's always tough because there's no injury report. Usually, from my time, if a guy's not practicing at all, it's because he's hurt. Like, there's something going on or there's a personal thing. Like, that usually, to me, speaks more than anything else. Because, like, even as well as Travion Henderson played in the game and the way he's been practicing, there's still, like, you're still going to get guys out there. You're still going to get Ramondre. Right? Like, no matter how the depth chart plays out, once the season comes, guys still need to be out there playing. So I would imagine it's some kind of injury and the team doesn't have to report it or say what the player is dealing with, you know, very similar to Carlton Davis. But, like, if there's a chance he could be out there, to me, he would be out there. So I would guess there's some kind of injury or something else going on.
Devin, a couple quick ones on the statue. What grade do you give the Tom Brady statue that was just revealed on Friday night?
Man, that statue was like a 9 out of 10 because I wanted to go make fun of the statue during the preseason game, going out there. That was going to be like my opener. The statue was pretty good though. I cannot knock that.
And big talking point here has been: is there going to be a Belichick one that joins Brady? Do you think there will, and do you think it'll be right next to Tom? And when can we get the Belichick one?
Man, I sure hope so. I mean, again, I'm obviously biased, I think, from playing there, and I think on playing on defense and some of the thought processes that went into some game plans and even overall as a team, like that success that the Patriots had, you can't take away. And I know people are going to be like post-Tom this and pre, but what we were able to accomplish in my time there and what those guys did before me and, you know, obviously the time I get to spend with Rodney Harrison now and him talking about his time with Bill and the consistency or the same phrases and different things that we heard from a game plan standpoint, I think it would be ridiculous that you wouldn't put a statue up of him. When that comes, I don't know. You kind of lean on like time heals, whatever happened towards the end of everything between the Crafts and Coach Belichick. But I just think it makes a lot of sense for him to have a statue, whether it's next to Tom, whether it's on another side of the stadium, whatever. I think that organization is built on, football-wise, is built on what those two men gave to the team year after year. And, you know, we're talking about 2 decades of excellence. That to me, deserves a statue.
Well, I know you're a Jersey guy now, but where can we see you this upcoming season? What are your plans?
Well, I'll be in Minnesota going over there Friday, and then the next time I'll be on NBC to start the season Thursday night, Philly and Dallas, which will be awesome. But still, Sunday night football pregame show, Football Night in America, 7 o'clock. I'll be there, and then I also will be calling, you know, some Thursday and Monday night games for Westwood One Radio, just to be back in that atmosphere calling games. I'll actually be calling New England's Thursday night and Monday night game against the Jets and the Giants.
Awesome.
On Westwood One.
All right. Well, maybe you should give some pointers to Tom about how to call a game. You know, you guys are competing now with that.
No, we're not competing. He's on the extreme varsity high top national ranked teams. I'm still on JV of like the local town team that's not that good. That's the difference between radio and the A team.
All right. Well, Devin, thanks so much for calling. Happy birthday again. We miss you here. So we hope to see you soon.
Appreciate it.
There we go.
There you go. There's Devin McCourty. He's the best.
He's one of the very few people who oftentimes, and it's nothing negative about anyone in particular, you have a guest and they're just not really listening. They hear the last thing you say and they react to it. And the speed with which he replies to questions he hasn't been prompted for, to me, is such a skill. Like, he's on a phone, it's early morning, he's got a bunch of kids, it's the middle of August, and it's like he listens and he gives a thoughtful answer. He's really talented at that.
He is. He's very, very good, and he also never asks for anything. Like, no. I said, happy birthday, want to come on the show tomorrow? He said, sure. Can I call in? I said, yes, here's the number, what time? Awesome. It was just, he never asks for anything. He's always up to come and talk to us. So thank you so much to Devin McCourty.
Great job, Courtney.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. We have to take a quick break. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit more about the Patriots, and then we will have the front office report with one Craig Breslow. I always wonder how they choose, like, who gets what week. You know, Sam always seems to get a high week.
The winning streak helps a lot for a Sam interview.
Yeah, Sam always, like, a big acquisition. Right. Sam's going to come
Roman
on.
Roman Anthony, long extension,
oh,
boom.
He's here to talk. Craig Breslow, it's like they're womp womp
right,
every
single
time. 2-4
on the road trip, here we go.
Terrible, terrible. Bad luck for him, but we'll talk to him at 9.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Now, Jones and Keefe
on WEEI. Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. We each gave you 60 seconds on everything to know for Pats and Vikings preseason game number 2. If you missed any of that, keep an eye out on social media at Jones and Keefe, Twitter and Instagram. Also on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Get it on your phone, free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. You can also listen on the iHeartRadio and TuneIn apps. That was Steph Diggs with Diana Rossini. And I want to be clear, Keith. I think yesterday was a good day for the Pats. You know, small g. It wasn't a great day. It wasn't a home run day. But
no, they had their issues.
I think it's another joint practice that they won. They did it last week against the Commanders. They won a preseason game in the middle of it. Another good joint practice. I think for those of us who feel like the Patriots are going to take a step forward this year, I have them for 9 wins. You have them for 10 wins. We both have them in the playoffs. I think you look at the way they practiced against good teams, and these are the things we put the most stock in. I feel pretty good about that. So, okay, that's my feeling on it. Put it aside. I didn't love the offensive line yesterday. How could you? They couldn't block hardly anything. I also don't love some of the warning signs here with Steph Diggs. And some of it is that they've managed him a little bit more as we've gone along, which maybe should be understood. Some of it is the answer he gave.
Yeah, it's very strange.
A little bit of it is the Todd Downing comment we talked about yesterday, where it's like, is he getting the offense? But really, most of it for me is after the first couple of days of training camp, he started to blend in, and he hasn't stood out. He's just been a part of the receiver room, not the guy in the receiver room. And if he's himself, if he's healthy, if he's Steph Diggs, he should stand out in this receiver room. And the fact that he isn't is starting to get me a little nervous the closer we get to week one.
I know, because when you go back to the time they signed him, I went in with a lot of like optimism, and I knew that he was coming off an injury and what his age was, and so it wasn't a guarantee by any shot. But I was like, you know what? He's going to be good. Even if he plays 15 games, he's going to be good. Then he's already doing stuff at OTAs. He's doing stuff at training camp. He passes his physical. He was their best receiver the first day of camp. You're like, oh, like it. My optimism
was first up through every drill. Yeah, he's first up through every drill. He's catching like the first two passes of every session from Drake May, like really stood out.
And then I even convinced myself 3, 4, 5 days removed from that, okay, maybe they know what they got in him and they're kind of working everybody else in. That's how my mind worked. I'm like, all right, they got it. They got it.
They're hiding him.
But then you're like, all right, there's been enough days that have gone by and enough opportunities where he is out there. And I don't think it's nothing that when he did show up against Washington, he wasn't there for the whole practice. And some of their best work 11-on-11s, he wasn't on the field.
That's a good point.
And then when he was introduced, wasn't the best. So you're like, okay, doesn't play in the preseason game, no problem. But then in these subsequent practices, and now a joint practice yesterday, also not standing out. Now, he wasn't invisible. He was out there. That's a positive. Had a couple of cool catches. Great. But once again, like the main plays are going to Mac Hollins, Pop Douglas, and running backs. So you're like, all right, like now I'm wondering. I thought, you know, him hitting the over on all of his betting totals was a lock once we saw him those first 2 days of camp. I'm like, he's healthy. The guy's a machine. When he's healthy, he's 1,000 yards rolling out of bed, sometimes much higher when he's in his prime and playing with Josh Allen. So even kind of grading it down a little bit, like, all right, he's 1,000 yards, 7 or 8 touchdowns, that's the kind of season. But then it's really kind of like gas pedal has been like the foot has been lifted off. And then he does the sit down with Diane Rossini. He's like, ah, we'll see about week one. I'm not all that excited about it, which I don't think is the right word he meant to say. Because he's like, I'm not excited about it? Or do you mean like you're just not like putting pressure on yourself?
That's what I think. That's what I think he meant, just listening.
Because he's like, the coaching staff's not excited about it. I'm like, what?
Right. You should be excited about being out there week one. I'm with you. I think he meant we're not like putting too much pressure on it or putting too much stock in it. Like if it happens, it happens. Great.
Right.
I think it was more that, but it was odd wording.
Yeah, like we're not all worked up. And maybe it means to him the same thing. But when I heard that, I'm like, how are you not excited? I'm excited. Like as a fan, I'm like, let's get out there. Let's see what it looks like with you out there week one when games matter. So, yeah, I would like to see maybe, you know, today you hear a couple of positive reports about him against his former team and, oh, Drake May maybe throws a couple of touchdowns and one of them's to him. Like something like that would make you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, so I agree that most of the standout plays don't involve him. They don't. I mean, go watch the clips from these practices, which we're forced to do. We're not there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big play to Mac Hollins. It's a big play to Travion Henderson. It's a one-footed throw from May to Kayshawn
Booty. Even early in camp, Kyle Williams, now he had lower lows, like some bad drops and things like that, miscues on interceptions, but he also had some pretty good plays.
Yeah.
You know,
the play he made on Gonzo, we were raving about. That was day one as well, and that feels like eons
that
ago.
That does, yeah.
And so I don't mean to say there's no positive highlights from Diggs. You brought up one I forgot about yesterday, Keith. It was one-on-ones, but he turned a D-back inside out. Good sign. There was another catch down the field I saw he made. It was at least in 7-on-7s. It might be 11-on-11s. I have to go back and watch it. Even still, after the preseason game, which he didn't suit up for against Washington, and I don't really care about that, he had a touchdown where he kind of toe-tapped in the back of the end zone. I saw that clip. But he also had a brutal drop in that same thing. So on the one hand, I'm just not reading as many positive reviews of Steph Diggs and the way he's playing. He's gotten a little case of the dropsies that happened in the scrimmage inside the stadium. It happened again in a practice the other weekend. We saw some of it on the practice field that we were at. And then you also see all the buzz is, well, Pop Douglas is always open, and he's been the best guy in camp. Kayshawn Booty and Drake May, they have their connection. Mac Hollins makes a play over here. Travion Henderson's a standout over there. And none of that is inherently bad. Like I like that those guys are making plays and May has a connection with them. But if all those guys are making plays and you read about them consistently and then I don't read about Steph Diggs, that means he's not the one making plays. And I just, he should stand out on this team with this group.
Yeah, because he's what makes the whole room different. And last year, you could make the case they were either the worst wide receiver group in the NFL or 31st or 30th. Like, they were down there.
Maybe in NFL history.
In the mix.
Recent history, yeah.
With other Patriots ones. Yeah. Really, since Edelman's been gone, other Patriots receiver rooms. So they were that bad. So you add him, which should make those guys better, right? You sort of elevate them, or you put them in the proper spot, I should say. It's like, you know, the Red Sox. Had they not added Garrett Crochet, you would have been like, yeah, Bayo and Giolito are having a good year, but like they're not aces. They're not game one starters. Like, you went and got that. And you were hoping that Steph Diggs, and maybe he still can. Like, nobody's writing him off, but it's like you were hoping that he comes in, helps take Drake May, helps take this offense to another level just based on not having that type of talent for the last few years.
You can watch on twitch.tv/BostonWEEI and chat there as well. I was monitoring the chat there, Keith.
People are into it?
Well, our guy Monty Mac.
Fan of the show.
Big fan of the show. One of the biggest. Said, oh, well, let's just ignore what Devin McCourty had to say about Steph Diggs. Let's not ignore it.
Let's embrace it.
Let's hear what Devin McCourty had to say this morning about Steph Diggs.
Devin, were you surprised by the coach's decision to not play Steph Diggs on Friday?
No, I think with Diggs, and we talked to him after practice, and he was kind of energetic still after the joint practice of Washington. He's like, I mean, I told him I could do everything. I'm 100%. He said, but they told him, hey, you know, like, we need you in the games. We need you during those big moments. We want you to be healthy. You've done this for a while now. You've been in preseason games. You've been in practices. We just want to be smart. And I think that makes a lot of sense. As a guy who got to play 13 years, I think there is an advantage to trying to map out a plan for you to be your best in those moments. And he's out there, he's going to be playing, but coming off an ACL, and even though he looks amazing, I give them credit to say, hey, let's not take this too far. Let's not get, you know, this new receiver who we really like and just throw him out there just so we can watch him in preseason. Let's kind of be smart and you know, take it one day at a time. And I think it will pay off for them. He's playing football. They're just not throwing him out there like he's 25. They're actually thinking about, you know, the miles that he's put on his body and how to best get the best out of Diggs later in the season.
Okay, so that is encouraging.
Yeah, no, that makes it you feel a little bit better.
Two things, though. Number one, why am I listening to Devin McCourty over Diggs himself? Like, Diggs was the one who made me feel not great listening to his answer to Rossini.
Because even if Diggs told Rossini that and then Rossini reported it, I'd be like, well.
Yeah, right. No,
heard it was from Diggs. There's no debating what he said.
I'm not dismissing what Devin McCourty said. Just out of the two, I'm going to listen to Diggs over McCourty. Diggs about himself.
Mm-hmm.
Secondarily, if you're asking me, I think Diggs is going to be suited up week one, which I was way wrong about in the offseason. I didn't think that would be the case. The question is, what's he going to look like? And listening to Diggs and then just watching the production or lack thereof in camp, I'm starting to wonder what he'll look like post-injury. That's all. I'm not saying he won't be out there week one.
But he's definitely participated in way more stuff than Carlton Davis.
Yep.
And so, I mean, I'll take that as a positive. We don't even know what Davis's injury is. We know what Diggs is, and yet he's been out there for this stuff. But you are just looking for him to separate himself. And, you know, I don't really expect him to play in the game on Saturday, and then I certainly don't expect him to play in the game against the Giants to wrap up the preseason. So I think the first time we see him in a real game will be week one. But when you go back 2 months ago, I think week one was very much in question. And I know he had that weird answer with Rossini, but I'd still bet money that he plays week one.
Me too.
Which, right away, that's a positive. Now, you hope that he ends up going out and having a really good year, but you got to at least be out there to get it started.
You told me earlier his over-under is 750 for yards, right?
750 and a half.
How you feeling about that?
So, I don't know. I feel like that's really low, too. Like, all the Drake May numbers, I feel like, are really low, but they're set there for a reason. I would take the over still on Steph Diggs. I don't feel as strongly about it, but at the same time, I thought he was going to get 1,000 yards. So there's a big drop-off from that. He can have, you know, 780 yards, lead the team in receive, maybe be one of three guys with, like, a similar receiving yards thing, which doesn't make him, like, a true number one, but it would still hit the over on that bet.
So you guys can discuss.
Did you take the over on that?
I think I take the over on 750. I'm definitely under 1,000, though.
If he plays all 17 games, that's 44 yards a game.
For 750?
Yeah.
Yeah, he should hit that.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe
he misses a game or two and that goes up.
But if Diggs' numbers are low, maybe that's some of why you're seeing that Drake May's numbers are low as well. 617-779-7937. We will get to Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel and Kiefer Madness coming up next.
This is Jones and Keefe on WEEI. Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app.
And take Boston Sports Original
everywhere you go.
Jones and Keefe on WEEI. Pat's in Minnesota for day two of joint practices. Let's head out to Minnesota and hear from Patriots head coach and birthday boy, Mike Vrabel. Okay. Interesting stuff out of the birthday boy today.
I agree with him completely on the carrot cake thing.
Oh, yeah?
Goat cake.
No.
Yeah, it is.
Ice cream cake.
No. Oh, my God. Just get regular ice cream. You don't want ice cream cake.
Oh, ice cream cake. You're
takes
so
up the whole freezer. Ice cream.
Well, if you don't eat it all. If you don't eat it all.
Get yourself a carrot cake.
Yeah.
Oh, the best. Me and Vrabel just splitting a carrot cake.
I like a carrot cake. I do.
I love it.
Not a goat cake, but it's good cake.
Number one cake.
Very snippy there with Phil. He's asking where he went to college. You're a smart guy. I know you didn't go to Ohio State.
I think Phil went to Georgetown.
Did you really?
Which is better than Ohio State.
It's quite a good school.
Much better than Ohio State.
He said, did you really believe what Steph Diggs told to Rossini? And good job by Phil. He's like, well, I don't know. It's what he said.
That's why I'm asking you.
So what do you think?
It was a weird response.
It was.
By Vrabel.
He also said you can't predict the future.
You can try. We do it every day.
But isn't that kind of what Diggs said? Diggs is like, well, yeah, I don't know. We'll see when we get there. Like, that is kind of what he said.
True. Maybe he agrees.
So Vrabel kind of said the same thing.
This is very strange. I know.
It is weird. He's like, he's going to practice today. He's been out there. He was also asked about some comments from Todd Downing.
Yeah.
Where it sounded like Diggs was upset maybe that he wasn't getting the ball as frequently as he should. I'm upset about it.
Same.
Maybe get open. But anyway, we can circle back to some of this. Good stuff there from Vrabel, who also said he thought that Drake May had a good day yesterday, leading into day two of joint practices. We'll give you more takeaways. Vrabel was a little later than expected, which means we're going to push Kiefer Madness to the 1 o'clock hour. So that's on the way. We'll give you a full Vrabel reaction, though. Interesting stuff on Steph Diggs coming up next.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Did you really believe that, Phil? I mean, you're a smart guy. I don't know where you went to school. It wasn't Ohio State, but, like, do you really believe that? Do you really believe that, Phil, or are you just trying to bait me into something?
WEEI Afternoons, and let's go right to the guest line. Our buddy Tom E. Curran from NBC Sports Boston joins us. Drains by James is Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at drainsbyjames.com. At drainsbyjames.com, they give a poop about your pipes. Tom Curran, that was Mike Vrabel having a little tete-a-tete with your boy Phil Perry. Did you think Mike Vrabel was a little more touchy today, a little more Parcellian today than usual?
It's funny because I wondered if he would be Parcellian when he went down there, because it seemed as if on Sunday he had a little bit of the red ass, as they say.
Yep.
Much better yesterday, but leading into today's practice, you heard that discussion. Phil went to Georgetown. Big brain on Phil. Smart kid. But I find it hard to believe that Vrabel wasn't up on the conversation with Diggs and Diana Russini, in which Diggs kind of played cat and mouse with his availability for the opener. So, you know, I think Mike likes to joust. So I'm not putting too much into it.
I want to flesh out a little bit more about this Steph Diggs, if you wouldn't mind, TC. You know, there's a lot of stuff kind of propping up. You know, Phil's talking about Steph not really being involved in the Vikings joint practices all that much. At least that was after yesterday's practice. And then, you know, you saw him kind of arrive late to practice against the Commanders. You know, there's talk of maybe this feeling of needing to get Tim the ball early in 7-on-7s and 11-on-11s. You know, you had the pink baggie, you know, story going back from a couple months ago that maybe he's a little bit at times lost on the field. Mm-hmm. And then Todd Downing's comments were kind of eye-raising. Just what are you making of Steph Diggs? Does this just come with it, and we should just kind of get settled in and kind of expect little things like this to crop up? Or are these things that are adding up maybe leading to bigger concerns?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see a little bit of smoke, and I base it not on the pink baggie or the when you showed up at practice. Maybe he had an upset stomach. You never know. I base it on Todd Downing explaining that, hey, you know, he needs to refine what he's doing and be in the right place at the right time, in essence, is what he said on Sunday, the wide receivers coach. So that, to me, for a 30-plus-year-old receiver who's making a lot of dough, he's done an unbelievable job, Diggs has, in rehabbing himself and getting out on the field. But is the mental part lacking? And I would imagine, after all his time in the league, it's not lacking because there's not brain power there. It's just, it must be frustrating to find him in a position where, for instance, Phil reported that he was not lined up in the right spot in the first 7-on-7 yesterday. It was a little bit of a hitch there. So I would imagine that's a hiccup. And then for Diggs today with Diana Russine, I don't know if you guys have played that for your audience, but just was a little bit of cat and mouse about his own availability with we'll see, not sure about that yet. And he had been all in. So Vrabel seemed to refute any idea of there being an issue, but Diggs was very productive early on in some of the early practices, looked terrific. We were all over the moon about his progress, but he's only had kind of peekaboo moments since. You know, mm-hmm. Sunday he dropped the last ball of practice on the goal line. He had the ball ricochet off of him in the inter-squad scrimmage in the stadium. So, you know, there just seems to be a stance that Diggs put forth today on the heels of Todd Downing's comments that makes me perk up to see if there's a looming pissing contest coming.
So, Tom, on the DEFCON scale, we'll do it, with five being okay and one being all-out panic. Where are we right now with the way the offensive line has looked out in Minnesota, regardless of whether or not we thought they were going to maybe get it handed to them by the Vikings?
Four. I would say it's four. I mean, four being, you know, you're not looking for that, but, you know, they played well yesterday, allowed sacks, no doubt, but as practice wore on, according to Phil and the other folks out there, they played much better. They had some big hits downfield and they got it blocked up. Today it sounded like it was absolutely atrocious. Which I thought it was going to be atrocious for 2 days going against that defense. You have a 4-13 team against a 14-3 team from 2024 with a very chaotic defense. So I don't think it's worth panic by any stretch of the imagination. And you know what? If you were panicking, then what? You're not going to import five new guys at this point, ride or die.
Tom Karn, NBC Sports Boston, with us here on WEEI Afternoons. Yesterday's practice, and obviously we didn't see it, but sounded like a great, like, Rocky fight, just a slugfest. Like,
yeah.
Grenard knocks out May, but then on the next play he goes deep. Are we going to have to accept that maybe that's what this Patriots offense is going to be a little bit? Like, they have a young, talented quarterback. They now look like they have a game-breaking running back. Maybe it's going to be take the big offensive plays, but also occasionally take your big lumps, and then we kind of evolve as the season goes on.
Yeah, it's really interesting you mentioned that, because I think they want to be a meat and potatoes offense. They have short-range guys who should be, in the aerial game, their best weapons, Diggs and Douglas. They have a good to very good tight end in Hunter Henry. They have three hard running backs. And they have, despite what happened from 1-3 Central Time, what should be a pretty decent offensive line. Decent, not good. Should approach mediocrity. How's that, Andy? I don't want to go
That's
over
fair.
The top here.
Feel strong.
Let's say they should approach mediocrity this year. So I still don't think that, regardless of what happened yesterday, that their meat and potatoes is going to be flinging it up there. I was trying to rationalize what May might be, because there's been so much hand-wringing, because that's what we're doing until the games come in. And people want him to be a franchise quarterback, and they want him to be that very quickly. Drew Bledsoe, in his second year, led the NFL in passing attempts. Might have had 699. But I do know this. He had 27 picks and 25 touchdowns. He took his team to the playoffs. It's a different era. But I can't imagine Drake May throwing 27 picks. And I can't imagine the Patriots throwing the ball 700 times. So,
no way.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is, the third overall pick from 2024 is going to be better than the first overall pick from 1993 when all is said and done. Just accept that there's going to be some times when he backs into a mailbox here and there.
Tom, I want to go on to the other side of the football. Reports are the defense got carved up today, which is interesting. That's kind of the first time I've heard of the defense getting it handed to him, so that's interesting. But the guy that I want to talk about on defense is Kyle Duggar, right? There's a case to be made for maybe keeping him. Clearly, he is maybe falling out of favor or just not high on their list of the top safeties right now. He's getting more reps with the second team. But, you know, the case for keeping him is that he's a serviceable player, right? There might not be any trade partners, and he's a depth piece. And then the case for cutting him is that maybe Mike wants to make an example out of him, and it's a culture-setting kind of thing. How do you think that plays out with Kyle Duggar? What do they do? They keep him or do they cut him?
I think if he's good enough, he'll stay. If he is still coming back, and Mike did seem to allude to the fact that he is still trying to get back from where he was after an arduous off-season rehab. So if there is still upside and more in the tank, then they absolutely should keep him. Even if he doesn't play to a $9 million salary, they need him. Well, they don't need him. They need every good player they can manage. But I noticed last week there was a play right before halftime, I believe, was Jalen Hawkins, maybe at the end of the first quarter. Jalen Hawkins made a break on the ball from his safety position on an outside receiver. It was just terrific, and I just haven't seen any of that from Duggar. It does remain interesting to me the number of guys last year or from the previous regime who are being whisked out. And there's too many of them for it to be a mere coincidence.
Okay, back to the worry scale for me, this time on the defensive side of the ball, Tom. Is it time to wonder, hey, what the hell's going on with Carlton Davis?
I guess. Yeah, I think, but I don't think it's a what the hell. More of a, Davis good? You think he's going to be good? As opposed to, what the hell's going on over there? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a guy who's had some injuries. I just don't think, you know, he got beat today, seemingly, for a touchdown. But he's out there practicing. He's not going to be Stephon Gilmore. I mean, Stephon Gilmore probably better than him right now. But he should be a good long corner. And fortunately for the Patriots right now, I like the way Alex Austin and DJ James have been playing, and Christian Gonzalez will be back out there. But I wouldn't get on August 15th long-term, I wouldn't be DEFCON-y about him either at this juncture.
Tom, before we let you go, this team, the Travion Henderson thing, do you think he can be, see every year where running backs come into the league, second-round picks, third-round picks, later than that in the draft, and become some of the best running backs in football. Travion Henderson hype train, where are you on that?
I'm in coach. I'm looking to see if I can move. Looking to see if I can move up to business class.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
I think that they would. You know, there's so much that they need in terms of offensive explosiveness. You know, when Danny Woodhead or Shane Vereen or James White came aboard as running backs with similar skill sets. I mean, James White didn't even see the field. He couldn't break a tackle to save his life in his first year. I thought he was never going to, you know, make the team. Even after 2015, he was not good in that season either. And then his career turned around. But I think Henderson has a different skill set, and I think the team has a different need. They didn't need Shane Vereen in his first year, and he got apprenticed too, to be a significant player. They need as many players as possible who can beat people consistently. And I think Henderson's pedigree, his experience at Ohio State, and his obvious explosiveness means that he could trend a hell of a lot closer to those backs who hit the ground running in the NFL than the ones that we're accustomed to seeing take a year or two here.
All right. He's Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston. We'll talk to you next week. You going to go do a – you got a roster projection yet? You close to that?
Phil's on those. Phil's a roster projection. Oh, I just go over them and go, you sure about that, Phil? Phil does all the heavy lifting.
Phil's the man. Phil's the man in the arena.
Where would we be without Phil?
Curran the critic.
Where would we be without Phil?
He paid his
quick
dues.
Quick glance tonight, everybody.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Oh, did Phil get the ink out of his new shorts yet?
As long as Phil's on, I'm watching.
Phil's in the A block.
All right, let's go, Phil. Phil Perry, Tom Curran, 6 o'clock.
I don't look out there, Phil.
Quick slants, NBC Sports Boston. We'll talk to you next week. Tom Curran had some interesting things to say there, and I want to react to one about the quarterback position where he made a definitive declaration that I want to run by Ted Johnson and see if he agrees. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Show Courtney and for Greg. We've got Wiggy, we've got Curtis, we've got leads from Scheim and Jackson in the bank, but we still have some left this morning. Curtis, your lead this morning was about Brady. He's rubbing you the wrong way.
Yeah. Brady's tour, which I'm sure is contractually obligated, is, I think, making him too, he's just everywhere saying things that I just find to be, at the very least, relatively tone deaf. He's talking about the new way of college sports, and he says the only reason he is where he is that he stuck it out at Michigan and didn't have the ability to go transfer and get money, and now it's all about how much money you make and how easy the job is to win. Neither of those things should be done in college. You should use college to instill the ethic and discipline that will get you the opportunity to earn money at the next level. Tom absolutely would have transferred from Michigan if the rules were they are now, especially considering to this day he hates Lloyd Carr for what he did. His father had to convince him not to leave. There's a great book by this gentleman who was the sports psychologist at Michigan that Tom's still close with, and Tom wrote the foreword of it, about how Tom desperately wanted to leave, but his dad convinced him to stay.
Right.
If he had the opportunity to transfer without penalty to the West Coast, he absolutely would have done it. I understand that the people that have been in charge of college sports are bothered by the freedom that the players now enjoy, but it is the logical conclusion of a free market society, and I believe it is the best for the people that are suffering the most on the field, actually putting their bodies on the line. So that is my lead.
Yeah, that's a good one. I agree with you, and I think people always get in this kind of when you think of athletes getting paid in college. And I get it is a lot of money, but, you know, coaches get a lot of money. Not every coach gets this. The head coach doesn't get the same as the defensive coordinator. So when people are like, well, they should all be getting paid the same. Nope, don't work that way. So, and I'm with you. Like, every athlete back then, like, if it was easy to transfer, you would transfer. I transferred, and it was a lot harder back in the day. And I transferred because my coach went from Marshall to Georgia, a better school, and there was a better opportunity for me there.
But don't you think that's the case for a lot of people, whether it's sports or the real world? Like, everybody loves to talk about how hard they had it in their day and that, you know, oh, these kids don't know how good they've got, they have it. Like, right. That's just what a lot of, not Wiggy, because no. Wiggy says, you know, everybody would do it if they had the opportunity. But I do think there are athletes out there that are like, no, I would have stayed where I was because, you know, I had...
Right.
I had this oomph that nobody has anymore.
But what Tom's right about is that there are experiences in your life, professionally or as a child, that are really, really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And in the moment, you don't want to do it. But when you're done, you're grateful you did. And you look back on your career and your life and you say, if not for that tough experience, right. I wouldn't be where I am.
Right.
But you don't have to. That's totally true. But you should also have the freedom to move about because that's what everybody else does.
Yep.
All right, Wiggy, good morning.
All right, good morning. So I kind of touched about this yesterday and did a little research, and the Patriots are about to do something that hasn't been done since 2019, and the Bears did it in 2013. And it looks like potentially start two offensive linemen that are both rookies. And this is something that you don't see in the NFL. It's very... You know, it's one of those things that it's very difficult to do, and there's a chance that your left side of the line could be two rookies. And what potentially that can look like, we talked about that a little bit with Mike Vrabel yesterday, and it has me a little bit concerned just because I understand the game and I know how difficult it is to do it. And when you look at those teams, Atlanta went 7-9 in 2019 when they did it, and the Bears went 8-8 when they did it in 2013. It is very difficult to do. I would really consider moving Michael Owenu to left guard. I think he's played there before in the past. Put him alongside Will Campbell, and then move Wilson to right guard. Who's the kid they got playing right tackle now, Shyam? Not Moses, but who's the
it's
kid?
It's huge.
Is it DeMontre Jacobs? I'll double check. Hold on.
All right. And I don't think he's a rookie. So I think when you look at where...
Marcus Bryant, he is the rookie.
Oh, he's a rookie too? Wow.
Marcus Bryant is a rookie, yeah.
Wow, so you could have three rookies there if Moses... But I'm thinking Moses is going to be the starter, so that's why I would put Wilson on the right side. And then at least it gives Will Campbell a veteran to lean on, and then it would give Wilson a veteran to lean on and Moses. So if you're New England, and that's why I think maybe you might want to look this week at some of the line combinations. I know that in the game last week, I don't know if you guys saw it, that they started Bradberry at center, but then they brought in Ben Brown very quickly. And so maybe there's, you know, shuffling the deck and see what it's going to look like. But that might be something that you want to keep your eyes on, fans. And maybe that might be something that I could see the Patriots potentially doing, because you don't want the blind side of Drake May being protected by two rookies.
All right. I love it. Thanks, Wiggs.
You got it.
My lead very quick this morning. It is breaking news that Taylor Swift is going to have her 12th album release. It's called The Life of a Showgirl. I'm wearing my Taylor Swift sweatshirt this morning. She is going to be on the New Heights podcast tomorrow. That's where she will make the announcement of when this album is coming out. I'm assuming because tomorrow is August 13th, it will come out tomorrow. She does like to release albums on Fridays as well. So maybe this Friday it's coming out. And the announcement is coming on the 13th. But I am beyond excited for this. I have goosebumps all over my legs right now while talking about it. I will be insufferable for the remainder of the week once this is released. I hope we get a single tomorrow at least. But The Life of a Showgirl coming out, her 12th album. And this means maybe a tour coming. I think that maybe we'll even get like a hint to Taylor and Travis being engaged. They look very lovey-dovey sitting next to each other on this podcast. I am thrilled. Over the moon. Very, very excited. It's exactly what I needed on a Tuesday, when Tuesdays are the worst day of the week. Thank you, Taylor. Thank you, Travis.
Taylor,
will her 13th album be her best?
You got to calm down.
I mean, you would think, Curtis. But
I mean, James is going to be jacked.
Oh, yeah.
We are going to have a Taylor Swift dance party.
And with the title, The Life of a Showgirl, it's giving high energy. It's giving very poppy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be right up James's alley.
He's a showman, so.
Yes, that is very, very, very
so
true.
Is she the princess of pop? Is that what she is?
I mean, yeah, no? I would assume so. Well, Queen, really.
Well, that's Beyonce. Queen Bee.
Yeah.
That is the beehive. Be careful. The beehive comes for you.
Swifties are scary, too.
Not like the beehive,
well,
though.
Oh, you never know.
Oh, my goodness. I am so excited.
Yes.
So,
sounds like an amazing album.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
The features. You seem insanely excited.
Yeah.
Are you excited, Sean?
Sure.
Come on.
It'll be fun to listen.
Yeah, you listen.
Who, do you think Taylor Swift's career would have been better if she had Jordan as a publicist?
No, I think Tree Payne is on a level all around.
Okay. I can't remember the last time I was...
Did Tree Payne come after T-Pain, or was just an...
Yes. I think he would after T-Pain. Yeah. I can't remember the last time I was geeked up for an album to drop.
Really?
Yeah.
Her last album that dropped, I got like a leak, and I listened to the leak, and people thought that it was rude that you're not a real fan if you listen to the leak. I don't care.
Reddit?
I got the album after, but I had to listen as soon as I got it. So I'm very excited.
I mean, plus, then again, my favorite musician passed away a long time ago. So once Biggie died, it was kind of like
Elvis.
No.
And when Biggie had an album, you got excited, right?
No, I mean, I was. You know, wasn't like that, but, you know, it was a lot longer.
Oh, Shive, I have a rejoin that I heard yesterday for the first time in a while. It's Biggie, and it was like, it made my whole workout so much better.
Which one is it? It's going to be tough. Is it Warnings? Dead Wrong.
No.
Well, let him give it to Shive, and then we'll do it as a rejoin.
We'll come back and tell me, everybody can tell me what you think.
All right, I'm sure everybody's on the edge of their seat for that, so we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Are you ready to ride the Patriots roller coaster, Keith?
Of course. Of course I am. It has been for weeks. It really has been. I think yesterday is kind of par for the course. There have been great days. There have been bad days. There have been days where both things are true. And that kind of feels like maybe how yesterday went. Very much so. Where if you watched a couple of plays, you're like, this team's going to win the Super Bowl. You watch a couple of plays, you're like, oh, they're not going to hit the over on the win total at all. And the offense might not be able to move the ball at all. So, yes, I am prepared for that. It is entertaining.
Oh,
it can be frustrating. You pull your hair out some of the times, but it's going to be entertaining, I think.
It's an interesting experience this preseason
with
the Patriots and with Drake May specifically, who you heard there off the top. It's Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. We'll go on the clock on Thursday, or at high noon, rather, looking ahead to Patriots preseason game number 2.
Day
against
game.
The Vikings. Yeah, afternoon game.
I feel like almost every preseason game is at night. Like Thursday, Friday night.
Let me tell you, I don't remember a day game for the Patriots in the preseason, but it lines up with my fantasy auction quite nicely.
Oh, you're liking
little
that.
Little fantasy auction pre-game. Hopefully Trevion Henderson doesn't do anything.
When's the pre-game, Saturday? Or the auction Saturday or
auction
Friday?
Auction Saturday evening.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, hopefully Trevion Henderson doesn't do too much. I have a feeling he's going to go for a buttload of money.
Yeah.
But that'll be a nice lead up there. So we'll go on the clock at high noon as we do every Thursday. We got Brad Foe talking Red Sox at 11:30. You'll hear Mike Vrabel again live today here on Jones and Keefe. Somewhere in the noontime hour, I think it's going to be closer to 12:45. Kiefer Madness as well. We'll see where that falls based on Vrabel. But a busy,
it's a
busy
local
day.
Madness.
It is. Oh, it's a local madness.
Local madness. Not to give too much away, but it's a local madness.
Okay, I like that.
Not a Florida story.
So we'll get to your phone calls. 617-779-7937 all day long. Keith, Bragg, we were at a lot of Patriots camp.
Sure were, about 10 of them.
We were at the joint practice against the Commanders. So I do feel a little disconnected from what went on yesterday in Minnesota.
I know.
But
I went home and put my binocs on anyway, just to feel like I was there. I just like looked into the wilderness.
Looking at Twitter through your binocs.
Looking at my neighbors.
Yeah.
Like, hey, don't worry about me, bud.
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going?
They put in a few calls about that, I think. We're disconnected.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're reading all the accounts, boots on the ground. I'm listening to Phil Perry and Curran and all these guys, their little recaps. And I'm curious how you read some of the firsthand accounts from the joint practices yesterday, because it was a very mixed bag.
Yeah, so basically I read it was kind of a boom or bust day for the offense, and it was one of those things where there were some big plays to be had, but there was also six sacks. Like, the offensive line had a real tough day against the Minnesota defense. We had a feeling this could be the case, though. You know, the last time they practiced here in New England, Vrabel ran a lot of the Minnesota stuff at the Patriots offense and was like, what do you guys think of this? And they didn't think much of it because Drake May, you know, didn't have a lot of time to do anything, didn't complete a lot of passes, and it was kind of a mess. But it wasn't all that way. It seemed like for every one or two of those plays, which were bad and need to get cleaned up, there was big plays to Pop Douglas or Mac Hollins, right? So Drake May, I think he himself overall sounded like had a pretty good day, right? The when the offense struggled, it wasn't a bad Drake May decision. It was, oh, the Vikings just did something that confused the Patriots offensive line, or maybe they just got pulled over or whatever, but they gave up way too many sacks. Like, the offensive line, I think, had a bad day. But when they stood upright, the Patriots did make plays.
So I think overall it was actually a good day for the Patriots. And I would consider who it came against as well. It came against a 14-win Minnesota Vikings team that who knows where they're going to be this year. I mentioned this on the show yesterday. I think their over-under is the same as the Pats. I believe they're 8.5, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, is it really?
But it's like heavy, heavy juice on the over. It's like minus 150 or something like that when I glanced at it. Fact check me on that. But I think Vegas is expecting a bit of a course correction for Minnesota. But I think that's a talented team. It's a team with a good defense and a good scheme and a good coordinator. And
yeah, they are 8.5.
They made some plays yesterday, right? So there's some aggression, but still, they're right there with the Patriots. But they should be a playoff team.
So they're eight. This is interesting. Their win total is 8.5. However, to win the Super Bowl, they're 25-1, while the Patriots 75-1.
Nice.
So the same over under. Now there's plus money on the over for the Pats, where it's minus money for the Vikings. But still, I mean, they look like to have similar records based on
Vegas.
Yeah,
and the Vikings are, it's very, very likely, based on the way you read the insights there. Number one, that they're more of a Super Bowl contender than a team like the Pats. But two, they're expected to have a winning record. They should be a good team, is my roundabout point, even if no one expects them to win 14 again, and I don't. So I actually read yesterday as a pretty good practice. Now, it sounds like the offensive line was abysmal.
Yeah.
So that's a problem, but I said yesterday during the show, specifically with Campbell, not the whole O-line, but specifically with Campbell, I'm going to hold out some of my feelings on him until I see it on Saturday in the game.
Oh, that's what you said yesterday. That's fair.
That's him, though. I didn't expect every offensive lineman to struggle. Yeah. Wilson, Bradbury. Like, I didn't say it about all those guys. I said that about him.
And Bradbury knows these guys.
Correct.
This is a Bradbury Bowl.
If anybody should have known what was coming, it was him. So I'll get that out of the way quick and say the offensive line was terrible. That's scary.
Yeah.
You know, there's some stuff coming out on Steph Diggs we're going to get to later on this hour that I don't love. Mm-hmm. So I didn't love everything yesterday.
No.
But we started the week, Keith, on Monday. It's a big week for Drake May. That's how we started. And I think May yesterday, by all accounts, was fine. I think May was actually pretty good. So if my big take going into the week is it's a huge week for May specifically, and May hits big plays, Mac Hollins down the field, Travion Henderson down the field, 70-yard touchdown, by the way. I don't know if you saw the highlights. I don't know in a real game if he's quite getting in there. I don't know if the defense
Collins also punted the ball after a touchdown. He was pissed.
Yeah, he's like, doesn't hurt the team, just my wallet.
Wow.
And I was like, nice.
Damn.
Be a good Patriots Monday guest.
Yeah.
You know.
Your shirts are wild.
If that were in the cards.
Yeah, I would have liked to talk to him.
I would have loved it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it couldn't happen,
maybe
I guess.
Maybe next year. Probably not, though.
Well, will we be here?
Will he be there?
There's a lot of moving parts. Will any of us be here, Keith?
If you ask Mike McDaniel, we're all one day closer. Mike McDaniel, maybe we can do Kiefer Madness on Mike McDaniel.
Yeah.
He's having a tough go of it down in Miami right now.
Had a few sads. So, no.
I do think overall it's a win, though.
I do, too.
From yesterday.
And we're leaving a whole half of it out. So I think May had a really good day.
Yeah.
And I think by all accounts, when he had time to throw, he hit plays. They made plays. The offensive line couldn't protect him. That's bad. But I think May was good. I also think if you read any of the accounts from Doug Kide in the Herald, who I think was watching the Pats defense.
Defense win.
And if you were reading anything out of Minnesota, I think McCarthy had a brutal day.
J.J. McCarthy is who we thought he was.
He threw a pick to Marcus Jones. There was another that was dropped. And I think the Patriots racked up sacks on him as well. So I think the defense had a great day. Yes. I think May had a really good day. I'm nervous about Diggs. The O-line was brutal. But overall, I think the first day of joint practices sounded like it went pretty well for the Pats.
And maybe we should highlight the defense more than we do. But I almost put them to the side because I do expect them to be at worst, middle of the pack. Whereas the Patriots offense feels like at best might be middle of the pack. Right. So there's obviously with the second year quarterback, with the addition of your first round pick, your second round pick, your two third round picks all being on offense, Steph Diggs being on, like there's a lot more intrigue, but also uncertainty on offense. Defense, I think they're going to be good. They don't even have Christian Gonzalez out there. They don't even have Carlton Davis really out there.
And no Jefferson on the other side for the Vikings.
No Jefferson. Yeah. No, but I mean, I can't love Kevin O'Connell and then be like, no Justin Jefferson, right? Like, they do have Jordan Addison.
It's fair.
J.J. McCarthy, I don't think is good, but I've been wrong about quarterbacks before. He was a 10th overall pick. So I give them credit if they're able to stymie them at all. And it sounds like they did. You know, McCarthy was throwing picks. He had some real bad underthrows. He was getting, quote-unquote, sacked. So I think big win, job well done by the Patriots defense. Feels like even more of a win than it was against Washington, where you were like, Jaden Daniels completed a bunch of short passes. They didn't really get to him too much. It wasn't like a loss for the Patriots, but it was like he did well. J.J. McCarthy did not. So I think that's definitely a positive sign. But then when you flip over to the other side, you're like, it feels like if there were plays to be made, Drake May made those plays.
100%. I think that's so like 1,000% the right way to
say it. Here we go again, because go back 2 months ago, and if I asked you what's the weakest position group on the Patriots, we would have said O-line, and maybe we would have said wideout. We would have said combined O-line wideout, like going in. I think actually we did tiers, didn't we, before camp? We tiered the position groups. And in the bottom tier was both O-line and wideout. And I feel like as camp has gone on, the wide receiver group has separated from them a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I feel way better about the wideouts than the O-line.
Whether it's Mac Hollins better than I thought, or Kayshon Booty or Pop Douglas, all those guys a little bit better. O-line remains the weakest position group. It was at the draft. It was at OTAs. It is now. You know, with the second preseason game coming up on Saturday, it still remains the worst one. It's just how much of an issue will it be come the regular season? Because they're not going to turn into world beaters overnight, but are they also going to be the reason why you went 3-and-out because they can't protect Drake May?
Yeah, so look, and I want to get to the specifics on the O-line in a moment, but I think the big picture takeaway so far on the Pats, and I don't love that May had the fumble in the preseason game, and you know he needs to take better care of the football, and the O-line struggled in that game. They've struggled in some of these joint practice. Fine, okay, I acknowledge all those things. But if you do take a step back and you look at, and we still have a preseason game and another joint practice today to go against the Vikings. But if you take a step back, Keith, they won the joint practice against Washington, rather. I think it was advantage Patriots in that one. They won the preseason game. I know Washington sat a lot of guys, but they won the preseason game. Then they go out and I think had the better day with Minnesota yesterday. It wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
But they had the better day.
Duck boats.
I mean, well, I'm not saying duck boats, but I am.
You're not saying duck boats.
I am saying you have them for 10 wins. I have them for 9 wins.
Yeah, no, I haven't budged off that.
There's no reason to be nervous about those predictions. Like, I mean, sitting with what we know today in the most important sessions of the preseason, which is really all we can evaluate.
Yeah.
The most important stuff, I think they've actually acquitted themselves pretty nicely, which just to me confirms that being bullish on them at 10 wins or 9 wins or a playoff season, not duck boats.
No.
But making the playoffs and having a winning season, I think you're kind of seeing that play out in the most important periods we've had so far.
Yeah, but, I mean, again, not to be a negative Nelson, but if the offensive line doesn't at least get to, like, an average level, right? Like, I don't know what the lowest it can be. Like, it's hard to duplicate what Cincinnati did the year they went to the Super Bowl, where they had statistically the worst offensive line in the league, but they still made the Super Bowl because they had a top five quarterback and two of the best receivers in football, right? Because you don't have a top five quarterback, nor do you have two of the top 10 wide receivers in the league or top 15 wide receivers in the league. So the offensive line is going to have to be better, because the way that people might argue against it, because it's funny, a lot of the national writers and predictions are saying that the money is actually on Patriots under. They're saying too many people are taking the over, like you and me. There are too many people are taking the over.
One of ESPN's top three bets, Keith.
Yeah. the over in the game against the Raiders, but also the under in wins for the season.
Correct.
But so if the offensive line's really bad, Steph Diggs we're going to get into and what's all circling around with him. You are starting the year. At the very least, Gonzalez and Davis aren't 100%. Now, I'm hopeful that I think if I had to predict, they're both play week one, but they're both still dealing with something.
Davis said yesterday he wouldn't say what he's dealing with.
We don't
with.
Even know what it is, which I don't love.
No, me neither. He was asked directly, what's he dealing with? He's like, I'd rather not say. But then he's like, but I will be out there week one. I'm like, how can I possibly even have an opinion? Yeah. I don't even know what you're dealing with for an injury.
No, I know. So there are still some, you know, question marks certainly with this team. But I have no problem having the expectations as high as they are. And I still fall back on the schedule that they have in front of them. You know, if they had a different schedule, then maybe I wouldn't be as out front about them hitting the over on 8.5 wins.
Yeah, but again, in the real competitive periods of this camp, and maybe
they've held up well.
Maybe today they walk off the field of Minnesota and we're like, yikes!
Yeah.
Or maybe after the preseason game on Saturday, we'll feel differently. But given what we know now, I don't think there's any reason to back away from being somewhat bullish on the Pats. They want a joint practice against the Commanders, by most accounts.
Mm-hmm.
They want a joint practice yesterday, even though it wasn't perfect. They want a preseason game in the middle. So I'm not telling you
sky's the limit.
I'm not telling you those are the end all be all, but it's really what we can go on right now.
Yeah, it's what's laid out in front of us.
And I think it confirms some of the things that we were feeling about the Patriots. They should be a lot better this year. They should be in the mix in the AFC playoff picture. So agree or disagree, you can jump in, 617-779-7937. That's your phone number and text line. You can interact Twitter and Instagram at Jones and Keefe. Watch along and chat, twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. Always a healthy chat going on Twitch. And watch on YouTube. Just subscribe to WEEI. Let's hear quickly from Drake May on the challenges from the Brian Flores defense yesterday. Keefe, I think everything we were bracing for and Vrabel had them bracing for after a poor practice earlier this week in New England before they went to Minnesota. I think we saw it play out yesterday. Flores kind of emptied the bucket on the Patriots offense. Here's what May said after that experience yesterday.
Yeah, I think the guys at times, you know, up there up front, I think I can help them out and be more demonstrative about where I want to send them and where I want them to go. But you know, really, I think, you know, we blocked it up when, you know, we got it right. And I think there's times where, you know, they're going to get us. You know, that's what he does. He tries to create kind of chaos. And I think it's good for us to see and know. And sometimes at the line, you may not know, hey, is this guy coming? Or they're just bluffing that. So it's good for us to see it. And I think it's great for us to learn from.
Okay.
You know, I'm not a big, clearly not a Belichick coaching tree guy.
Mm-hmm.
Flores I like, though. Flores, and maybe not as a head coach, that kind of went sideways, and maybe he'll get another opportunity. For a number of reasons, and it wasn't all his fault.
We talked about this in the offseason. He should get another opportunity.
He definitely should, and he had a top-five defense last year. If he has another top-five defense this year, he'll get a job. I mean, unless he's, like, sneaky blackballed by the league because everything happened in Miami.
Yeah, I don't think it's that sneaky. But
no,
yeah,
not that. But he's, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's in the league at least. It's not like they were like, you can't hire the guy. Like, Pittsburgh took him, a few years ago. I forget what his role was with Tomlin and the Steelers.
Was he like a linebacker?
Might have been like assistant head coach or whatever they do to have him on the staff. But no, I mean, everybody speaks so highly of his defenses. They're very aggressive. I think you even saw it in New England. Like, the Matt Patricia defenses, there were years that they had a lot of success. But they were also loaded with talent, and then Bill always got a lot of that credit too. But then when they brought in Flores, you're like, oh my God, they're flying around now. Like, it just seems like it was different.
More aggressive
way
defense.
More
yeah.
aggressive.
Yeah.
And so I like Flores a lot as sort of an aside, but what a great team to practice against. You know, it's not just a vanilla, like, here's our cover two, go ahead and go up against cover two the whole practice. Like, you don't know where guys are lined up, where they're coming from. If they're serious, like, you're like, where's, like, I can't even find any safeties because everyone's up on the line or everyone's back or whatever. Like, good to, you're literally throwing the kitchen sink at them in practice, which I think is great.
No, me too. And I also like that Drake May is taking some accountability there for the O-line. He's like, I gotta get them to block it up right. That's on me.
Definitely.
So I think that's a sign of a good leader for all the flack we're giving May about, is he a leader and is Vrabel trying to pull more out of him as a leader and this and that? I think that's an example of leadership. Hey, I was under duress all day long, but I can do a better job of getting him to block it upright. Okay, that aside, and for all the nice things we said about the Patriots yesterday at practice, how concerned are you about the offensive line? Because Campbell gave up a couple of sacks.
On a scale of 1 to 100?
Wilson gave up a couple of sacks. Bradbury had a miserable day, apparently. Moses is never out there. I guess on when it was one guy that I didn't read anything too negative about yesterday. Yeah, sure. On a scale of 1 to 100, what's the concern level?
81?
Seven!
No, 7. It's like seven. 81.
97 maybe, yeah.
7 maybe on a scale of 10, yeah. But I don't know. I don't recognize scales to 10. So like an 81? No, it is because right tackle, like, let's see, right? We're all fingers crossed on Morgan Moses, but it's another guy that you're like, all right, who is it going to be? And if he's out there, is he going to play every snap all season long? Probably not. Most guys don't.
That way.
And the backup right tackles all seem to be like a big drop off from there. I would say Onwenu's the one guy that I just sort of say, okay, like fine, right tackle, Onwenu. Friend of the show, Mike Onwenu is going to join us again this year. Bradbury's at an up and down camp, more of a down camp overall. And he even came in with the, well, he sucks at pass blocking, but he's a veteran. And they had, like, they eyed him as soon as they forced David Andrews into retirement. They're like, oh, we want this guy. So let's see how he goes. And then the rookies, I think you started the show talking about riding the wave of the whole team. I think Wilson and Campbell have also very much been the face of that, where there's been days where you're like, left side of the O-line is set for 10 years. Like, you're good to go. And then there's, oh, they run like a simple stunt on them and, you know, Drake May sack fumbled in the game. So I still am overall thumbs up on Campbell and thumbs up on Wilson. I think Wilson's been more up and down to this point. But after hearing the reports from yesterday, not seeing it, but reading it and hearing everybody, sounds like it was a rough go. And maybe it is a real learning experience. So we'll see how today goes, see how the preseason game goes. But it's their weakest position group. So I don't know how you can't at least be concerned a bit.
No, and you look, at least they didn't turn it over yesterday. May and the first team offense anyway didn't turn it over. I forget if Dobbs did. But May and the first team offense did not.
He threw two pick sixes yesterday, I think I saw.
Dobbs did?
I think so.
Okay. So
this is a little misleading, I would say, because it's not misleading, but let me just paint this. In the preseason game, the exact play that happened to Drake May would have ended with a player touching his shoulder, and he wouldn't have fumbled. He wouldn't have tried to throw it away. It wouldn't have been anything like that.
No, that's a good point.
So they get sacked 6 times. But are we sure Drake May is not trying to be a hero for any of those 6? Does he try to pick up an extra yard and then that leads to a fumble?
In a real game setting.
He really shouldn't fumble in these situations. If he does, like, yikes.
Good point.
Yeah.
But I didn't read anything about turnovers yesterday from May.
Yeah, no picks, right? I don't think any picks.
So I feel okay about that. But, right, if it's full contact taking guys to the ground, is May going to try to be a hero? Fair point on that front. So I don't feel good about the O-line. You brought up Moses. I just double-checked this. Morgan, basically his entire career, his rookie year, he only played in 8 games. I don't know if that's because he was a rookie easing into the league or if there was an injury. I didn't do research on that. But after that, 15 to 2022, he didn't miss a game.
Yeah.
Then the last 2 years, he's only played in 14. Now, it's not like he's missed
a ton
of time.
He's missed, what, 6 total games?
But to answer your question, and this is a guy they're already managing in camp, is he going to be out there for every snap at right tackle? No. So if you got to piece it together for 2 or 3 with him, who's that going to be?
I know.
Yeah, I am concerned about the O-line. For as many nice things as I said about the Patriots yesterday in Minnesota, first-team offense, let's see how they do today. You'll hear from Vrabel late in the noontime hour, 12:30, 12:45, somewhere in there. For as many nice things as we've said, that has to be a big, big concern for Patriots fans. So you can jump in, your thoughts, everything you've read and heard on joint practices yesterday, the overall trajectory of the Patriots this preseason. I'd say if you were bullish on them, they've checked some boxes against the Commanders and the Vikings as well. Again, 617-779-7937. We got a key for madness for you today, as we do most Thursdays. We'll talk to Rob Bradford coming up a little over an hour from now as we have to get to the Red Sox. They drop another series last night in Houston.
Oh boy.
Manager getting kicked out.
Oof.
More weird circumstances with Cora and the umps, which we'll get to coming up as well. But speaking of concerns for the Patriots, we mentioned the offensive line. Is it time to get a little nervous about Steph Diggs and his timeline for a return to actual game action? We'll get to that right after Trending with Billy Lane.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
I thought he did well. I thought he,
you know, it's easy to go into Blender when you're seeing a bunch of this stuff and kind of scrambling and turning one, you know, less than favorable play into a, you know, a real storm. So I didn't see that. I thought he was able to process and we didn't execute all the time, but I didn't see any panic from him. I thought he was able to communicate and get the things that he wanted and then hit some plays because of it. You know, when we blocked him, we were able to make some plays. And then we'll just have to try to see what happens today and continue to go from there.
That was Mike Vrabel earlier today. Happy birthday, Mike. Ted, did you buy your former teammate something for his birthday?
Yeah, no, I didn't get anything for my 52nd. It's number day, number birthday,
yeah.
Right? So he's 50.
Yeah.
I turned 52 this year. Yeah, so no, I'm good. Mike, what can I give Mike that he would want for his birthday?
Super Bowl.
I'll see if I can.
I don't think
order
Ted can
that
do
on
that.
Amazon. Yeah, I don't think they have those on Amazon.
Well, what's it? Your bottle of wine, beer? What would he?
Yeah. What's his? What's his poison of choice?
It's just, you know, yeah, light beer.
Yeah.
Miller Lite.
Mike was always had he had some hookups around the league, but especially in Pittsburgh where he
Pardon
used to
me?
Play. What's that?
You don't mean
hookups?
Just tell your story.
Can I finish my story before you start doing all that? Hookups with the alcohol after a game.
Oh, Iron right? City?
In Pittsburgh, and we always had a cooler full of cold brewskis after the game. We get on the bus because Vrabel paid the equipment guys for the Steelers a nice little amount of scroll that they hooked us
nice.
Up.
So a cooler full of ICs and IC lights. Nice.
Yeah, man.
Love you it. Know what, Teddy? Brewski with brewskis. Brewskis with brewski?
Yeah,
my God.
What was the name of the joint you used to go to down Route 1 all the time?
You had the End Zone Motor Lodge, and then had, what was the barbecue place that we
yeah,
go
that's
to?
Yeah, that's the one that...
I forget the name of that that old barbecue
I
spot.
I heard that was a good time.
It was a lot of fun. The Halloween parties were, I think, the best. But, you know, post-game were always good times. Those were some of our funnest let-loose, let-your-hair-down kind of... times to get together. The best time to party and hang out with your teammates is after a win and you get home from a 1 o'clock game and with enough time to chill, have some food, drink, you know, a few beers and kind of go over the game a little bit. That's the best time to be with your teammates.
What about after a practice that may or may not have gone very well against another team out in Minnesota? Joint practice with the Vikings has wrapped up for the day. We need to review some of the earlier tweets and then some new ones. I'm reading from Mark Daniels' page right now on Twitter. This was one that caught my attention earlier. Through 12 pass plays, I have the Vikings with 3 sacks on Drake May, 2 allowed by Will Campbell, and the other might have been on Onwenu. Later on, Fitzy, we got a good and a bad tweet here.
Okay.
A little balance. Drake May just hit Kayshon Booty for a Hail Mary-type touchdown in the 2-minute drill. Patriots offense looked rough before that. May was sacked, Moses beat, and then Campbell false-started. But hey, they scored on a Hail Mary. I'm not sure that's a high percentage play there. Then Mark Daniels recaps sort of the numbers. 10 of 15 for Drake May on practice day 2. 12 of 18 for Josh Dobbs, who also struggled yesterday, in case you were.
Big time. 2 pick sixes, I believe.
And to the point where somebody, I couldn't tell who it was, asked if Dobbs is definitively the backup or if he's competing with Woolridge, the third string.
Shoot,
and Mike,
I think he should be.
Mike kind of said that Dobbs is pretty much the backup there.
Veteran
Vikings won the day. Patriots wide receivers weren't separating during 11-on-11s. They finished strong, though, with the Booty TD. This is what worries me. This is what worries me. That right there.
Go ahead.
So they scored on a Hail Mary. That's not sustainable. That's not how you win. When you mix that in to what Jaden Daniels did last year and you steal one, but otherwise your offense is good and you're winning games in traditional sense, that's great. But it feels like the Hail Mary, the big play, the deep ball
is what they have.
The wheel route that just breaks free for 60 yards.
Yeah,
busted coverage.
Ted, I know you said, you know, he's going to hit a guy on that this year. Travion Henderson is going to hit a middle linebacker. Coverage, whatever.
Yeah.
But can he do it, I don't know, 10 of 15 weeks, 11 of 17?
No,
a way to live.
No.
Nor is a Hail Mary to Kayshon Booty. So that's the concern for me is not that I said it to Curran. I think they can make plays, big plays. I think there might be some fun, whoa, moments. And then the other team scores and scores again, and you turn it over, and all of a sudden the woe is forgotten, and you're down 21-7.
I'm reading. We could all play, basically, Patriots – Patriots beat guy roulette here. I'm following Doug Kyed. He says that he thought May played pretty well today, not helped out by offensive line or receivers.
Yeah, no.
Both groups having a bad day. It's one thing for Minnesota's pass rush to win the day because we talked about what a good pass rush it was. Minnesota does not have the most vaunted secondary. Good safety play. Very good safeties. But for the Pats to be dropping balls, and here, I know how much you love when I bring up one-on-ones. Guess who was 0-for-4 in one-on-ones today?
I don't know.
Douglas.
Steph Diggs.
Steph Diggs was 0-for-4? Didn't catch a ball in one-on-ones?
4-0, it says.
That's like 0-8-0. I mean, 0-8. Like, that's, I double that. Like, Steph Diggs, who's back, he just told us he's back. We listened to it. If you're back, I don't care who you're going against. Was Darrell Revis on the other side? Were you on Revis Island? Because I'm pretty sure he retired like a decade ago. So you weren't on Revis Island.
Oh, no, he won all four. I apologize. Steph Diggs won all four. My apologies. Oh, I'll back that train up. 4-0.
I was like, well, you can't be.
Yeah, not 0-for-4. I read it the wrong way. My apologies. He crushed it.
The wide receivers have the advantage in that. So if you go 0-for-4, that would be alarming. But 4-0, that's good.
Kyle Williams is sadly, he had a drop last week in the preseason game, another drop today. He did come in. Everyone talked about the vaunted release package, fastest receiver on the team. He's had a couple dropsies. Got a little early hands antsy going on down there with old Kyle.
Diggs has had some drops, too, and that happens. Like, I don't want to jump to conclusions, but they're searching for consistency in the passing game. That's clear. Will Campbell searching for consistency. Drake May searching for consistency. The wide receivers searching for consistency, and it doesn't seem like really any of them are finding it. I guess Drake May, if you want to take one silver, you want me to do the silver lining thing? I think Drake May has been better than everybody around him so far. I think he's the least of your problems. If you want to turn this in, flip it around and turn this into a silver lining. Am I worried about the receivers getting open and catching the ball? Yes, I am. Am I worried about Drake May being hit because Will Campbell and Wilson can't block up a TE stunner? Yes, I am.
Yeah, and Wilson might be losing his job, it sounds like.
Yeah, but to who?
Ben Brown.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to see that.
Yeah, I get it. I just think there was he's kind of cooled off a little bit is all I'm hearing and from the last couple days.
Yeah, so
Ben Brown is getting more starter reps than Jared Wilson is right now.
Yeah, Ben Brown, who arrived on like a Thursday and played pretty well last year.
In the 10 games he played in, he was pretty good. Yeah,
but I just have my concern. Like, I almost could have embraced.
He's been in the pros a lot longer than Jared Wilson has.
100%. But the one thing that I could embrace, Ted, with the young guys is what Curran tried to sell you on last week. Remember when he said two rookies and you said feast? And he said, well, but what if they start to get better? Like, you know what I mean? There's a positivity.
There's always a what if.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who's the negative one now? I was posing a positive there. Yes, Dan Ball.
I would like to double down on my stance from earlier this week that with the offensive line at this state, I don't know why they're not trying Jared Wilson at his natural position of center.
Correct.
Yes.
Which is what we've been begging for days, if not weeks,
I don't
here
get
on
it.
This program.
Which also, Bradbury and Brown versus that option, I don't get it.
Which also allows you, as I said,
harder
then,
position, maybe?
In a way, it is.
In but Josh's system.
It's also the theory is like you can kind of protect him between two veterans,
you
maybe.
You can, usually.
So we can go rookie, veteran, rookie, stagger instead of lining up a wall of rookies to just put a like kick me sign on for the other team.
Can he snap the shotgun snap?
Well, there's been issues with that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, that's not good. If you can't snap the shotgun snap, but where you don't. I don't know if you want him as your center.
And I also would have questions, or maybe Josh would have questions. So Josh's offense puts a lot on the quarterback, but the quarterback and the center still have to be on the same page. And to have a quarterback who's trying to figure it out and now a rookie center who's trying to figure
it
out.
It's too much.
That might be
too much right now.
Yeah. So Fitzy, you got any positivity? We're seeking here. We're seeking a little.
Well, here's a nice
kicking
handshake.
Did they hit any field goals?
Yeah. Well, there's a really nice handshake between Mike Vrabel and Justin Jefferson.
Oh, so we got that going for us. The other team has a number one receiver. In fact, the other team has the number one receiver they got when they traded away Stephon Diggs. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, by all accounts, it seems like Drake May was good, not great today. The line stunk. Minnesota won on all the levels today.
Yeah, Pop Douglas I saw had a couple drops. Add him to that, which concerns me. And I know Edelman and others had drops, but in that volume position, I don't want to hear that. I was trying to count on you as the go-to guy. So that's my positive spin is Drake May is the least of your problems.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a positive or a negative, but he's the least of your problems now.
Yep. I think at the end of the day, I would rather them go to Minnesota and go up against a very good football team that's got a chaotic defense that's going to confuse this offense and make them look bad at times than going against some crappy team and looking good. I would rather, I want them to feel overwhelmed. I want them to be exhausted when they leave. I want them to come away with so much tape that they can learn from that they have no other choice than to get better. Like, they will be better from this experience, even though aesthetically it hasn't been fun to look at.
That's what I said earlier, but it makes it resonates better when you hear it from the former football
player.
So
how will your guy handle it? Because I know one of the he's compared to Parcells a lot in style. They like to compare him as sort of a manipulator. And so does that mean he'll have to build his team back up? If they get whooped for a couple days,
yep,
they'll have to be a little
love
like,
them up,
pat
love
on
them
the
up.
Back.
And that's it. You want to see your team kind of go down and then see if they can build themselves back up. I mean, that process, a lot of people just individually can't do it. Can you team collectively do it? Do you have the leaders to do it? They will reveal themselves. And so then you start becoming more of a team by overcoming your struggles and obstacles that you experienced early in the season.
And they've certainly had some of those the last couple of days. They even had another fight that Mike Vrabel tried to get in to break up. Yep. I don't know if he actually got bloodied this time around. That would be a tough one on your birthday.
On your birthday?
You got to break up a fight. All of a sudden, you come out with a black eye or blood on your lip.
I feel like that'd be his perfect day.
He probably
actually, in
like
a lot
it.
Of ways, he'd be like, I got the best gift possible.
Hardo Vrabel.
Another
like
scrape.
You know, that's what I'd get him for his birthday. Just a forearm shiver to the chest or like a two-gap. He loves that. He would love that. One note that I read that I'm not happy with. The second week in a row, the opponent in the preseason game's quarterback will not be playing.
Yeah. I don't like that.
What the hell? This guy didn't play at all last year, and you're holding him out of these preseason games?
Yeah, I don't.
Because they're nervous about that knee. They don't want him to get hurt again.
Yeah, but he's got,
I know, but he's got to play at some point.
And he could have got hurt today. He's out there against the Patriots today. Like, stuff happens. Well, remember that time Tom Brady got carted off because some Bucks guy, went to the ground and took out his knee, and it was, like, this big controversy in joint practices? Like, it can happen. Doesn't he have to play football? Like, he's never played before. Time for him to play football, and I would like to actually see Drake May step on the field with a Jaden Daniels or with a J.J. McCarthy, and more importantly, the defense get a chance to defend. So now the Patriots' defense is not going to defend Jefferson, is not going to defend J.J. McCarthy. Like, so we're getting...
Well, this is a defense. It's, the backup is Sam Howell, who gave the Patriots' defense from a couple years ago fits, so...
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. 617-779-7937 if you want to react to what's going on the practice fields of Minnesota. Yesterday was an up-and-down day. Today seems like it was a down day. Seems like the defense got shredded and the offense got killed by the pass rush yet again. Up next, we got to talk about some audio. Chris Sims, Mike Florio, breaking down the Tom Brady statue and the discussion of what statue should be next. This is some really interesting statue audio that even Ted Johnson can embrace. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
That was Mike Florio. And I was listening to this. Well, no, it's definitely weird. And he definitely defined it because I was yelling in my car, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan, who has a statue in the United Center in Chicago and owned Charlotte. I think he's since sold the team. I don't think he's actually the owner anymore. But, you know, he did own a team in the league. He was the
real
one. Still
different.
Oh, it's definitely different.
They might have a statue. Did Jordan come back and, you know, for Michael Jordan night and come back the following year for a statue and then come back the next year for something else? And
that statue's amazing. I forgot how good that one is.
The Jordan one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But is it weird? Everything Tom Brady's done for the last X number of years feels weird sometimes.
I mean, this whole kind of franchise has got some weirdness to it, man.
Right.
If we're being honest.
And even the speech. I know the speech got some people riled up when he's making fun of Jets fans. Well, as the owner of the Raiders, but also as the color commentator who'll be doing Jets games eventually. At some point, they'll cross paths. Like, just his layers of pick a lane and skate. If you want to be an owner, just go be an owner. There was even blowback.
He don't want to pick a lane. He wants to break barriers.
I saw there was even blowback from, is it Wayne Rooney, the soccer guy who was the coach?
Yeah.
He was ticked off.
I've been trying to
guess. He was ticked off that Tom called him out and said his team was lazy, and he was lazy because he was kind of fat or whatever was going on there.
Tom's calling everybody out.
Yeah.
Scottie Scheffler's being called out.
Yeah, like,
Wayne Rooney's being called out.
Maybe just, I don't know.
He's got opinions on everything these days.
Call out an occasional quarterback on a broadcast. Do your actual job.
That would be nice.
Right.
That would be nice.
Your $37 million a year job. Maybe just criticize one person in that and don't worry about all the other criticisms you seem to be lobbying
about. Sign off on that one.
Because that is supposed to be one of his primary jobs, right? I would think Fox
to call
believes,
out and analyze others.
No, no, no. I'm just saying, I think Fox probably believes if I give you $37 million, like, this is
$370 million. Yeah,
but I mean, yeah, per year.
Per year.
Like this is one of your primary jobs. Like you're going to focus on this and try to do this really well.
I would think so. Yes,
I would hope. Especially since they have a new streaming service, like everybody else, and I saw them using Brady as like a face to try to sell the app or the streaming service. Whatever. The next question, or the next piece of audio we have here. So this is Pro Football Talk Podcast. Chris Sims, Mike Florio.
I thought this was a really good discussion.
Discussing statues, and the next question they ask obviously involves, should another statue be in Foxborough?
Since we're going down this path, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Should there be a Bill Belichick statue on the other side of the stadium?
Of course. I mean, that's without a doubt, yes. I mean, none of that happens. Brady doesn't happen. Nothing happens up there without Bill Belichick. Right. I mean, again, I know Bill Brady was the man. He was better than he got credit for coming out of Michigan and all that. But yeah, I am a huge believer in that everything there goes back to Bill Belichick. And he made Brady into what he is, the leader, the player, all that. It was in there with him. But like we talk about all the time, sometimes you got to have somebody bring it out of you. Right. Michigan didn't see him to think he was that special. But so, yes, Belichick 100%. But I don't know when that's going to happen. Because, you know, him and Kraft seem to be going back at each other with passive aggressiveness here over the last few years.
Yeah, passive aggressiveness, some just flat out aggressiveness, I would say, between those two. So, Ted, Chris Sims' reaction was, yeah, Belichick deserves a statue. Thoughts?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see him maybe deserving it, yeah. But it won't happen. It's not going to happen.
Not anytime soon.
I think Tom's more deserving of a statue than Bill, but that doesn't mean Bill's not deserving of recognition as well.
Right.
Still should have been the three of them. I think maybe.
In one statue, you mean?
Yeah, just sort of like the cover of the alternate cover of the Dynasty book. Just something remembering like the trio was so important to the success of the organization.
But doesn't that sort of diminish the honor you're bestowing on Brady?
Yes.
Like, that's where I get back to that Dion thing. Dion thinks he belongs in a higher Hall of Fame than just the regular one. Tom Brady belongs on the highest rung of whatever the Patriots are going to honor you.
Should Phil Jackson be with Michael Jordan? And who was the general manager at the time or the owner of the...
Jerry.
K-word.
Yeah, so it
would be weird if I think all three of them were up there. Like, you can't...
Right. If you want to put... And I actually think in a weird way, now people would fight... This would be very controversial, but if you end up doing the three of them, let's just say you have future expansion in mind, that same spot, Brady should be in the middle and taller. I could see like a shorter Belichick and Kraft. So Brady's is 17 feet when you include the pedestal.
The pedestal.
So there should be like 10 or 12 feet total.
You think they'd be okay with that?
Nope.
No way.
And that's where egos get involved. I would like to think they are, because Bill says on the record all the time, I've never made one tackle or thrown one pass or any of that.
So he's so humble. So humble.
You don't believe
him? He just oozes humility, doesn't he?
But no, he does not. He does not at all. But that, I think, would be appropriate, because Tom Brady should stand taller than the other two. I know Robert Kraft, technically, you're the owner and you paid both of them. But the reality is the game was won on the field.
RKK should get some credit, not even close to the credit that Tom gets. And I think Bill should get a lot of credit, but not even close to the credit that Tom gets. Tom's by far and away the main reason the championships came.
And I do think eventually, I think in my lifetime, although I am on the other side of halfway done, that there will be three statues there. I just don't know the order of operations.
Who gets it first, Kraft or Belichick? Kraft?
I would say Kraft, but I don't feel great about that one, because I think he is now sensitive and aware to, ever since the Hall of Fame stuff and pushing it too hard.
If he puts a statue of himself up,
it's a bad look.
Can you imagine what the Hall of Fame committee would think of that?
You can't do that. So in a weird way, it probably has to be posthumously that gets put up by Jonathan.
Yep.
And I don't know how much Jonathan loves Bill. In fact,
it ain't ever going to happen. There's not going to be a Bill Belichick statue. No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Doesn't that feel like wrong, though? If you're a Patriots fan and you go there and you look at Tom Brady and Robert Kraft, don't you say,
no,
feels like there's something missing here.
If it's Kraft and just Tom, that's weird. If it's just Tom, to me, that's fine.
So maybe that's the answer.
Leave it as is.
I'm okay with that.
Maybe just make his head bigger.
Well, I think that's done. That would be weird if they
in the middle of the night and put a new one on.
Just inflate it a little bit, like they used to do with the old helmets, where you put a needle in the back of it and just pump the thing up. And one more quick piece of audio here. Who is more important, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick.
I don't know what Brady would have been without Belichick. We saw one example of it, though, after 20 years in the NFL. You can't say Brady would have been a Super Bowl winning quarterback from the get-go just because he won a Super Bowl in his first year after he had been formed by the influences of Bill Belichick.
Yeah, right.
If he never encounters Belichick, is he a Super Bowl winning quarterback? I don't know. If Belichick never encounters Brady, is he a Super Bowl winning coach?
Fair.
I'm less confident about that than I am about Brady becoming a Super Bowl champion.
There we go, 10%.
Yeah, I don't usually get along with sort of the views of Mike Florio, but I think he nailed it. I think he nailed it. Just because Brady won at the end, that was after he had been coached by theoretically a good coach for a long time. So that doesn't mean he would have won immediately or early in his career with a different coach.
I disagree with that.
No, and you can, yeah.
Tom was the four-string quarterback his rookie year. How much FaceTime was he having with the head coach? And then he comes in the few games into the second year, and he's like this madman at practice. I didn't see, Belichick working a lot with Tom Brady before he finally got his opportunity to play. I didn't. Mm-hmm. So to sit there and say he was molded by Belichick before he even started playing, I think is not true.
I do believe, though, if Tom Brady had never aligned with Bill Belichick, I don't think Bill would have ever had a Super Bowl ring. In fact, he might have been fired and gone the way of just a forgotten NFL coach who had good defensive coordinator run with the Giants and Lawrence Taylor back in the day.
Well, there's your answer, man.
617-779-7937, reacting to the statue talk. It's Belichick, it's Brady. The question that just never goes away, especially here on WEEI Afternoons. Up next, it is 5 o'clock. That means it's time for The Drive.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.